Hey everyone, right before this episode starts, I just wanted to give you guys the a brief little update on the show as it stands right now. We're going to have a little micro episode coming out on Friday to discuss this in more detail, but we do plan to revive this show here in 2022. We're going to have episodes coming out every other week, just as we always anticipated. You know, and we've got some things planned up, you know, but for now, we've got this episode of Acura ready for you all to listen to. It's been sitting in my files since early November, so it's a little bit dated, but I hope you all enjoy. Thanks.
Josh, you've always been a pain in the ass, you know. You've always been telling me what to do since we were kids. You always treat me like a kid. You always show up and start bossing me around, and you don't deny it.
And now you're a boss, too, of this pile of podcasts.
Joshua!
That was amazing. I had no idea that you guys had that, like, in store, but I'm so glad that you did.
Yeah, we always, that's the thing, like, we always do that. That's part of the tradition. And it's a very original tradition that I never got from any other podcast.
No other podcast
okay?
does
I
this.
I don't rip things off, okay? I am a very original person that does very original things, okay?
This is why we love you, Josh.
Hi, I'm Brogan.
Hi, I'm AJ. I am from Inner Circle. Some of you may know me, some of you may not. Oh. I'm very, very excited to be on How to Taco today to talk about Acura. Which
did you open our notes, AJ? The notes that we sent in the guest
chat? No, I did not.
Hey, Clayton, open your fucking mouth. Should. Say some stuff.
Okay, so it's very strange how Acura is actually a woman's dress shop online, but they have some pretty good items at some reasonable prices.
The dirty deeds done dirt cheap.
So go to shopacura.com.
We're not doing this. We're not already saying go to this website, check this shit out. We're not doing that yet.
Yeah, not unless they sponsor us. You know, we gotta get that money.
Oh my god. Hi everybody, I'm Brogan.
And I'm Josh. And this is
How to Otaku.
Are you going to
the show where we overanalyze anime like a mad scientist with the world's largest graph paper supply.
And this is our Acura episode, the film which literally exploded the idea of, you know, what people expected from animation
at
the time.
This is our Acura on episode.
Yeah, our Acura. Our episode on Acura. What did I say?
You said our Acura on episode.
Oh, all right, let me redo that then. And
this
is our
episode.
It's okay.
We've come too far.
If you haven't noticed, which honestly, you might need to see a doctor if you haven't. We've got guests, the Inner Circle.
Yep.
AJ and Clayton are here. And we're talking about Acura.
Yeah, identify yourselves by voice first so that listeners can, like, you know who you are. You know.
This is AJ, and AJ is who I am. I'm AJ. Hi.
Yes.
I'm Clayton. Go to shopacura.com.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, I just wanted you guys to do that because, like, you know, on an audio podcast or whatever, like, it can be hard to keep track of voices, so I just wanted to make sure everybody, like, you know, at home knew.
Normally, I have a body.
All of our lovely listeners, who we love very much, just, you know, thank you for coming to our show. If you're from the Inner Circle's YouTube channel and you decided to come join us after listening to our discussion on Ghost in the Shell, then we're very happy to have you. So, you know, welcome, and, you know, feel free to stick around while we discuss this crazy, crazy film.
Also, but, big shout out. We had a recent massive demographic change, Josh. Our audience is now majority female. So welcome to the podcast, ladies.
Yeah, welcome to the podcast. We're happy you're here, truly. Like, you know, it was a demographic shift I really wasn't expecting, to be honest. Like, I thought we were going to stick, like, squarely into the, like, the male 18 to 25, like, you know, peg and never leave that. But we're happy to have like a very different audience, and I don't know, like, I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because, like, maybe it's when people hear the sound of my voice, they expect like this super handsome, like, Chris Pine looking man, you know. But unfortunately, you know, their dreams will be shattered when they see my face on the Inner Circle.
We're gonna be having all kinds of big reveals in that episode, aren't we?
All kinds of big reveals, you know. I do a face reveal. I do a an ass reveal.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah, that's,
you know,
that's
literally
my favorite
everything.
Part.
I do a big toe reveal if you're into those and you're into that. You know, I reveal literally everything. I reveal the lizard man under this suit skin.
Under the skin suit.
So, you know. But I'm gonna shut the fuck up.
Well,
hopefully
we can bring some like 12-year-old males into your audience. You know, diversify a bit, because that's I think that's generally our demographic. I could
males.
Be wrong though.
Can I just say,
how
I
you guys
look...
get 12-year-old males? Like, don't you guys like? Aren't you guys like an explicit show?
I mean, yeah.
You know,
I say,
and, like,
I say,
12-year-olds love it when
like...
you curse.
That's true. That's very true.
Let me just say, I look exactly like Sam Elliott. So picture young Sam Elliott when you hear my voice, for anyone that hears this podcast. That's true.
Sam Elliott is just cowboy Jim Carrey. Changed my mind.
So, Clayton, what have you been doing for the past week?
So,
What's been your recent media project?
So, I haven't been working on much, but... I've been watching a lot of things, none of which are anime. I just want to make this known. I don't watch, like, any anime. I'm pretty blind when it comes to, just anything. I don't watch any show. I know very few movies, only, like, the big ones everybody knows, for the most part.
Yeah, you know, if you're looking for a show to start getting into anime, I can recommend this really cool one. It's called How to Otaku, you know. It's run by
Shameless
guys.
Plug.
Listen, I'm just, they're not paying me to say that. Nobody's paying me to say that.
Or you could just watch Trash Taste instead, you know, the biggest anime podcast on the planet.
Oh my god.
I will contradict myself a little bit and say, I did, like, a few days ago finish a rewatch of Cowboy Bebop, because that's one of the only things I have seen, and I really enjoy it. And I showed it to, like, a close friend of mine, and... He claimed he didn't get it, but that's a whole different thing. Getting into that.
Now, Clayton, I will say you've just hit a sore spot with our audience. The Cowboy Bean Bowl episode is coming. I promise. I swear it's gonna happen, guys. We've recorded the first episode. I just haven't had a chance to edit it. Please don't hate me.
Yeah.
Anyways,
but since then, there's been Cowboy Bebop news. Lots of it, actually.
We'll get into that in a second.
Okay.
AJ,
but...
your media project, what have you been watching or playing or reading?
Oh, well, I've been getting into a lot of stuff. Mainly, I've been diving headfirst into the world of Dune, getting hyped for Denis Villeneuve's new movie coming out later this month. Currently reading the novel. Mm-hmm. And then, like Clayton, I'm not a huge anime person. I like the more niche stuff, especially stuff that's from the 90s, like Trigun and Berserk. You guys know that Berserk is, like, my favorite anime thing ever. Which, by the way, I'm going to plug How to Otaku real quick. Their podcast on Berserk is some of the best listening that these ears have heard. So thank you guys for that.
Oh,
wow,
thank you.
Wow, that's
nice. It was really awesome getting to hear your guys' perspective on it, because, like, me being sort of the Miura can do no wrong kind of guy, like, it's helpful to get sort of... I appreciated Josh's perspective, because you just had a completely different approach to it than I did.
Hmm.
And it was also fun getting to see your reaction to the eclipse.
Yeah, the eclipse, watching, you know, like, really fucked up apocalypses seems to be our thing, you know, considering, like, you know, we've got the you know, we got the thing at the end of Full Metal Alchemist. We got, you know, actually, like, Something Apocalyptic happens in Fooly Cooly as well. Then Berserk, now Acura. I don't know what happens in Cowboy Bebop. I presume it won't be that, but, you know. Maybe.
So, Josh, I want to get into this. I've been playing Metroid Dread. In fact, I 100% yes. Metroid Dread in, like, 3 days. It was phenomenal. Everybody just go fucking play every Metroid game. They're all great. Except for maybe Other M. You can skip that one. And maybe, like, the first Metroid for the NES. Yeah. Play Zero Mission instead. But fuck it. Play Metroid.
Yeah, I tried playing the first Metroid a couple of times, and it's just, like, it's just one of those things where, like, you know, NES-era games, like, you know, they can feel, like, so stripped of what makes, like, games work and are fun that, you know, they can be really hard to get into, and I just couldn't get into that one. But
some of them are incredibly innovative, but they are, in some cases, very archaic at this point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But I did start Super Metroid, and Super Metroid is, you know, it's got enough of the function there that I can have fun with it. So I started that, and I was enjoying it, but I haven't gotten back to it. I should. But I also have Metroid Dread coming in the mail, so it should be here in the next few days, hell and I'll yeah. play that.
I want to throw down
like. So you've been watching Boku no Piku Academia, yeah?
All right, Borgen.
Great segue. Borgen. Wonderful segue. Like, fantastic. Not... But yeah, I've been watching, like, I've seen, like, about the first 10 episodes of My Hero, and, like, I think it's slightly better Sky High, the show. Like, you know, I don't know, I don't want to say, like, too many mean things about it, because, you know, I know My Hero has a big fan base, and they get angry when anybody says anything mean about the show, but...
It's my understanding that's just them being shonen fans. That's generally how they are.
You can be mean at me. I fucking hate My Hero. I think it's worse than Hunter x Hunter.
Oh God. You know, you want to talk about a show that fucking baits you? That is an anime that I have seen. And good God.
Yeah, but like, you know, My Hero is like, it's the kind of thing where like I know it's not really doing anything terribly special, but at the same time, like it's taking that same idea of like superheroes in the real world and like fleshing out the world enough that I feel interested in seeing where it goes, you know.
Fair enough.
So, you know, and plus there's a dude that literally has a laser shoot out of his belly button, and that's just fun, you know. Like, they have fun with the powers, so that's just about what I want out of superhero stuff. Yeah. But anyway, do you guys want to talk a little bit about like what your show is? Because, you know, we kind of like let you talk about what the Inner Circle, but like, what is it? And like, you know, what's your, you know, what do you guys generally like do?
Well, I mean, okay. I'll let Clayton take over for this one, actually.
Yeah, let the man with seniority here say a piece. Our show is maybe the most distilled, purified form of pick random movie of the week and just try to like spitfire your thoughts of it out and discuss it for a good bit of time until you run out of thoughts, and then, or if you've seen some older Inner Circles that are lost in time, which is a different story, until, you know, your recording equipment dies. But that doesn't happen anymore. it is movie discussions, very stripped down with not too much of fancy editing or like weird YouTube things people do where they try to act smug and like, oh yeah, well here's what this movie's about and here's all my 12 pieces of evidence to back this up. And like, nah, we talk about movies we like, some movies we hate, how we feel about them, and then we'll question each other on it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that sounds like what I do with like myself, my inner monologue all the time, because like it doesn't seem like anybody likes to talk to with me about movies in a deep way like that, you know. But maybe you guys should invite me on the show or something. You know,
we would love to have you again. We always welcome guests. You know, we want to actually diversify our hosts and hopefully get some different perspectives, because that's kind of what makes the Inner Circle special, at least to me, is like we get a lot into the nitty-gritty, Clayton and I, and the most fun about debating movies with Clayton is that he generally has a completely different perspective than I do. And we've gotten a lot of good talking points out of that. But for the most part, yeah, Clayton pretty much summed it up. It's like a video podcast, and we mm-hmm. just review whatever we feel like reviewing. Like, there's a lot of old retro movies that like are very niche, not a lot of people have seen, and then there are a few popular ones such as Fight Club and American Psycho, and probably our most recent / popular review was Godzilla vs. Kong.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Godzilla vs. Godzilla vs. Kong, the only movie that is better because it's dumb.
The Freddy v. Jason video was pretty fun.
Oh, God, I love that movie.
That's right, that too.
I'm kind of disappointed because we haven't done a lot of October stuff this year, but I hope to do some more horror films in the future.
Yeah, don't worry, it's coming.
Yeah. You know, have me on to discuss Alien 3 or something like that.
Oh, yes,
you
know? That needs to happen. Also, we need to talk about Ninja Scroll at some point.
Ninja Scroll. Still don't know what that is.
It's an anime. Trust me, okay? It's cool.
All right, I'll take your word for it. But speaking of anime, you guys kind of dipped your toes into this, but like, what are your relationships to anime as a whole? Like, you know, what were some of your if you watched anime like as at a point, you know, like what were your like your you know your
introductions? What were your formative anime memories?
Your gateway drugs, I suppose. And then, like, what do you think are, like, some of, like, the core, like, the text for you? Like, as far as, like, you know, why the medium is great, if you would say that.
Well, I'm gonna...
Sorry to load so much on you.
That's cool. I'm gonna let Clayton start us off, because I'm more interested in hearing what he has to say.
Okay. I was waiting for you to go. So, anime. Anime is a weird thing for me, because my biggest exposure to anime, even from a young age, was all the weird motherfuckers. Like weird motherfuckers in my town who were the ones that would yell the most about, you know, about Japanese things, and that gave me like a weird view of it for the longest time. But you know, as a kid, I was basic as fuck. I watched like Gen 1 Yu-Gi-Oh. That was my shit. But I never went past like Beyblade, Gen 1 Yu-Gi-Oh, or anything like that. I watched it when I was young, and then after a certain age, I just kind of stopped. And then some strange people would constantly tell me like, have you heard of this, and they say like a jumble of words together that I'm like, that's not a title of anything. I'd be like, you know, like something like Hunter x Hunter, like, you're just saying, what are you saying to me? Quit talking to me. And it was that's been most of my life around anime and people who I know who tried to tell me to watch anime. And at a certain point I got bored, and I found some of like what are known as the classics, like Ghost in the Shell and Akira and a few others. But in general, I don't know, it's not my favorite art form, and some tropes I don't like, and animation styles make me roll my eyes. So I have a very combative relationship with anime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think that's understandable. Like, you know, that's definitely one of the bigger hurdles that's been, like, you know, standing between me and the medium as a whole, is just, like, you know, the tropes that don't really translate over to American audiences, and you just kind of have to, like, you know, get over it and, like, you know, try to find the stuff that you like, you know.
I really can't tell if Clayton would absolutely adore or absolutely abhor, what's that one about the girl with the scissors? Somebody help me
out
here.
Kill a Kill.
Yeah. Okay, so I've actually... So here's the thing. Can I tell a little story? Like, is this good? Is this good?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. So about a year and a half ago, a couple of friends of mine at college here sat me down one night and was like, listen, we're going to show you some good anime, man. All right? We're going to get you into this. And the first show they played was Kill a Kill. And I have never been more, like, dejected watching something in my life than by the time I got to the end of the first episode of Kill a Kill. And it's like, oh, so the show is the more naked this woman gets, the more powerful she is, and she can fight better. Okay.
I love Kill a Kill. Sure.
That didn't help. That did not help my perceptions of the entire medium. Where I'm like, oh, so we're gonna come up with excuses and like to empower this character to get less clothes on her for fan service. So I started drinking, yeah. And after I started drinking, I enjoyed it a little bit more. But I not at all. Not gonna ever.
Because everything's fun with alcohol, though.
Even the Star Wars sequel.
Oh God, not here, please.
Let me escape this. Let me escape podcast. This living hell of Star Wars.
So, what about you, AJ? What's your anime or text, as I guess Josh?
You know, Rogan, I'm glad you asked. My history with anime is sort of a bit complicated in that I have phases where I'm absolutely in love with it. Like sometimes I'll go through periods where that's the only thing I watch, and then there are periods where I'm just like, I'm so over it. I need to watch like real cinema or whatnot. I would say I'm an anime fan, but there's definitely a lot I haven't seen. It started for me when I was a little kid. It was mainly Dragon Ball Z, Naruto, Pokemon, a little bit of Yu-Gi-Oh, and a little bit of Bakugan. those are the big ones. Yeah, for those of you that remember Bakugan.
Can I ask a question? So I think I know exactly what the answer is, but I'm going to ask anyway out of curiosity. What is the plot of Bakugan?
Bakugan, if memory serves, I haven't watched it since I was in like middle school.
I mean, you don't have to like go into like crazy detail. Just like give me like the, you know, the one.
It's essentially Yu-Gi-Oh, but instead of playing with cards, they play with little transforming ball toys.
Oh yeah,
it's Yu-Gi-Oh but with balls.
Yeah,
it's Yu-Gi-Oh with balls. So take the idea of throwing cards down, but you're rolling your balls.
That didn't sound
yeah, that's
right.
What I was into. They even had like a little wrist gauntlet that you could store your Bakugans on.
No way! They had a fucking card deck, but for Bakugan
yeah,
balls.
Yeah, they definitely did. That was in the show. Like you could watch it in the show and then buy it and wear it on your wrist like a weeb.
Oh my god!
Of course it was the show. You know, I was just wondering if it was like a complete like Pokemon clone or if it was like, you know, or if it had like something that was unique about it.
And by the way,
it has balls.
By the way, when I use the term weeb, I'm not using that in any way to attack anybody. Like I fully admit that I am definitely a weeb. I've seen enough anime to consider myself a weeb. But yeah, so continuing on from that, you know, my kid phase, I got out of it for a while, and then in high school, my buddy Sterling was getting really heavy into anime. Like I think his big start was with One Piece. Because he's like the biggest One Piece fan I've ever met, or probably ever will meet. And so, he got me to watch a lot of stuff in high school. Some stuff I didn't really like over the years. Definitely things that come to mind, Konosuba, Sekirei, this little show called Boku no Pico.
I've seen that. I haven't seen a lot, but I've seen that. That's a really bad thing to say that you know about.
Unfortunately, I know about that.
Yeah, that's the thing you show somebody if you just don't want them to ever touch the medium ever again.
Okay, so
like,
the night my friends were showing me Kill la Kill, that same night after we were drinking, they put on Boku no Pico, and we went through it.
Your friends should be arrested.
We was going through it, and about halfway through, like, I think the third episode, maybe? I don't know. There was a weird, one of the weird sex scenes was happening. And one of their girlfriends entered the apartment, walked down the hallway into the living room, looked at the TV for 10 seconds,
oh my
turned
God.
Around, and she left. She went right back out the door.
No fucking left. Way.
Oh my God.
Wow. That's awesome.
Oh my God.
Okay, so you had these friends who wanted to introduce you to anime, and the first two things they picked were involving child nudity.
Yeah, technically, yeah, I guess.
Okay.
Arrested. Arrested.
Yes.
Arrested.
Yes, go to horny jail.
I can say
real
it.
Horny jail.
Anyway,
yeah, continue
so, continuing on, in high school, I watched as much stuff that I ended up loving as well. Like, I ended up loving Kill la Kill, strangely enough. But then I started going off and watching things on my own. I got heavy into Trigun. I got back into Dragon Ball Z and Hellsing. And I found that like a lot of the anime that I gravitate towards is like 90s stuff. There are some modern animes today that I enjoy. Like I enjoy Rising of Shield Hero. I enjoy ReZero. I enjoy definitely love the shit out of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Represent
JoJo's for sure. Diamond is unbreakable. But out of all of those shows, the one that hit me the most and the one that I always go back to is Berserk. Berserk affected me in a way that no other anime slash manga has. It's like my favorite thing that to come out of Japan. So if we ever come back to do this show again, you will definitely hear me talk and gush about Berserk.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, like, have you seen the 2018 show, or is it 2016? 2016. Have you seen the 2016
show? I've
seen
2016. I haven't bothered with 2017. Just like everybody else on the internet claims, it's absolute trash. It is a dumpster fire of a series. If you're going to watch Berserk, just track down the 97 anime.
It's on YouTube.
You don't even really
it's
have to track
free.
It down. It's on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Well, I was dumb. I wanted to get a physical copy because there was one on like this really dope steelbook that I found online.
Yeah.
I bought it like immediately, but it turns out it was a copy from the UK, and so it's region locked, and I have to get a region free player in order to watch it. And I was so mad. I've been sitting on it for like 6 months.
Aren't PlayStation 2's region free?
Well, okay. You can like change the region on your PlayStation, but you can only change it a limited number of times. Unfortunately.
Like, that's one of the things that's really frustrating, just as like, you know, a person who is trying to find like, you know, movies, TV shows, all these things that are like, you know, and like some of them are just like you can't find them in your region, and you have to track down like a version that you can find. You can
reasonably
play.
God, this would be
play.
A really good spot for a fucking NordVPN sponsor, wouldn't it?
And today is sponsored by NordVPN.
No, it's not. It's not, Josh.
No, I tried NordVPN once, and it did not work at all. But
yeah, you lost a sponsor.
But
you just lost it forever. No more Nord. Thanks, Josh.
But yeah. But the good news is that recently I learned is that for the upcoming future, like, there's not going to be any region locking on 4K Blu-rays, which means that anything that gets released on 4K Blu-ray anywhere will work on any 4K Blu-ray player.
That's good news. So, that makes me really happy, actually. No, for real.
Yeah, and I don't know if I really want to, but I know there's, like, an $80 limited edition copy of Dawn of the Dead, which is one of my favorite zombie movies of all time. And I really, really want to get that thing, even though, like, you know, it's $80 and only one of the discs I will be able to play. But, you know, it'd be nice to own the movie.
No, I feel that for sure. Yeah. But, you know, we were talking about, like, our personal experiences with anime. I'm really embarrassed now to admit this, but in preparation for this podcast, I just watched Akira today because I wanted it to be really fresh in my mind, and it hit me as I was watching it. Like, I had never seen this film in its entirety before. Like, this was the first time I'd ever really truly seen Akira. And honestly, yeah, it's one of those films that, like, I'm kicking myself because I can't believe it took this long for me to see it. Because if I had seen this when I was, like, 14, 15, this would have been my Berserk, more than likely. like, years before I even found out about Berserk. This would have...
Well, hell yeah. 32 minutes in sounds like as good a time as any to me to get started talking about Akira.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm here for it. Like, I have so much to dump about this movie. It's insane.
Later.
Clayton, do you have any relationship to Akira, or is this also your first time watching it?
This is not my first time watching it. I've like loosely known about it through, I don't know, weird ancillary connections for the longest time, like Red Motorcycle, Jacket Man, Big Blob Kid at some point. But I saw it in full the first time when I was like, I think halfway through high school, so about sophomore or junior, and I went, hey, I didn't really care back then. I was just kind of like, whatever. But I've like seen it one or two more times since then, and it's, I'm not sure how to describe exactly how I feel about Akira.
All right, well, we'll get into that in a little bit. Brogan, what's your relationship to Akira?
My relationship to Akira is that I watched it probably freshman year of high school, and I've seen it about once a year since. I will be forever scarred by the Ben and Jerry's in Charleston, South Carolina, for making me work the one day that I was going to be capable of seeing a theatric screening of this film. A once-in-a-lifetime opportunity I will likely never get again. Thank you, Ben and Jerry's. Love you to death. and yeah, Akira is great. Love this movie. It's really good. There's no end of discussion about this online, and it's probably going to be hard for us to say anything that if you have seen Akira several times or have any like knowledge of online discussion, it's going to be difficult for us to say something new, but it's great. Yeah. What about you?
Me? I believe the first time I saw this was... I think it might have been my senior year of high school. No, that's not correct. That's not correct. No, I was, I think it was my the summer break after my freshman year of high school. I was out on a camping trip and, like, you know, just like, you know, we had like a little TV in the in our camper van or whatever, and I was scrolling through Hulu on that, on the camp Wi-Fi or whatever, and I found Akira, and I was like, okay, you know, it, I don't have anything better to watch tonight, I'll check it out, see what it is, because like I'd seen the poster before, and like I'd had friends who were into anime talk about Akira a little bit. And so I was like, okay, you know, it sounds kind of interesting. I'll check it out. Totally the wrong way to watch it, you know, on like a fucking 32-inch 720p TV in a camper, like just all alone, like, you know. But even then, like, I knew I had seen something really interesting and fascinating, but I hadn't really come back to it until today. And today I got to watch it like on a big 4K television in my home and, you know, just like, it's fucking gorgeous. Like, I really wish the actual 4K version was available. There's a 4K, like, limited edition Steelbook Blu-ray or something, but that's the only way to get hold of it. And, you know, I might buy it, but not right now. But anyway, but yeah, that's my relationship to Akira. And, you know, without spoiling too much of my thoughts, I think it's just, like, it's a really fascinating work as a whole. And, you know, we should get into like the actual like specifics of the film.
Oh yeah.
So where do I start with this? So like, should I start with like the history of the?
Do I really even start? I mean, start at the beginning, baby.
Like the beginning of the film.
I mean, did you do much digging into like the lore and shit of like?
Digging into the lore. I did digging into like the production like history and stuff like that. which, like, it's not terribly interesting. The one really interesting thing I found was that the film, like, when you start the film, you might have noticed that it has, like, the Toho logo first, and then it says Acura Committee Presents Acura. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I was like, what is the Acura Committee? So I looked it up. It's actually, like, several, like, large Japanese corporations. Like, they all were like, you know, we want to get into, like, this anime thing, because we see that's kind of booming, and we want to, like, make something that's, like, massive and will, like, take a hold of the thing, you know? And they were like, what do we adapt? And everybody kind of settled on Akira, because it was this really popular manga that was out at the time. So, like, one of them got a hold of the rights, and then they created, like, this big collective thing where they were all putting money into it to, like, to fund the movie. And the movie was, like, the most expensive animated film, like, at that point, ever. Like,
wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, like, and I believe there were a few companies that, like, you know, like, the movie was a financial success. Like, it made its money back, but some of them had invested so much money into it that the returns weren't great enough, and they actually folded as a company.
God.
So even though this movie was a success, like, some of the companies that funded it actually went under because
of
it.
That's...
because it didn't make enough money.
That's incredible. Like, I've never heard of anything like that happening ever before in the history of cinema.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And, like, some of the companies that invested in it were, like, Bandai, Toho, Laserdisc, like,
right,
you
like
know.
Huge companies. Honestly, this wasn't the only reason Laserdisc went under, but it is part of the reason Laserdisc went under.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because of Akira.
Sword to die on.
Yeah, no, that's called going out with a bang. Wow.
And the, there's, like, other interesting stuff about, like, how the movie was actually made, too. Like, so when animation is generally done, like, if they don't have to, then they won't animate, like, one drawing for every frame. I think we went over this on a previous podcast about it, but, like,
we definitely,
you know, animation,
did, but it's worth getting into just for the sake of,
yeah, for the sake of this,
be
so
on
like
the same page.
So, like, generally speaking, like, you know, a film is 24 frames per second, 24 images per second being played that fast, like, simulates motion. But with animation, like, it's so expensive to draw 24 frames per second that they can effectively cut down the budget by half if they decide to just, you know, animate every other frame. So that, like, you know, you still get the motion, but it's, like, a little more stilted, but, you know, it's a little cheaper, and it might not matter too much.
It also doesn't carry across. Like, visually, there are ways to get around it. Smear frames, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
There are ways that the industry has done this for decades, that they just know how to make it seamless.
Yeah, and I mean, at the time, there were companies that, like, you know, they would do that for most of the movie, but then, like, if they had, like, a couple really big action scenes or whatever that they wanted to look really impressive, they would film it on one. I mean, they would animate on ones, so every frame had its own drawing to
and
make
this,
things,
this
like,
more clear.
This
practice is called Sakuga.
Yeah, Sakuga. But the, but Acura, I believe, is the, like, the movie with the most of this, like, in its entirety. Like, not all of the film is animated in ones, from what I understand, but a lot of it is. So, like, it's just super laborious and super time-consuming, but it looks fantastic, especially in the action scenes.
No, yeah, like it, and it, then, it really showed, it showed off to me in the facial expressions. Like,
yeah, the facial expressions.
Every character is so emotive. Like, there's a moment where, like, Kaneda is like just talking about Tetsuo, and he's essentially screaming about Tetsuo, and like every motion that he makes, like enunciating words, is animated. Like, his mouth is moving into different shapes and like wrinkles in his face. Yeah. Like, it's insane.
Oh yeah. So that's the other thing. This film was created on a principle that not many other animated productions are done by. In a lot of cases, the animation will be done before the voices are recorded, or they'll be done vaguely at the same time. Generally, it's beforehand. But in the case of Akira, this is one of the only like pre-recorded vocal tracks, and yeah. then they animated it to match the vocal track.
Mm-hmm.
So as opposed to having like one or two frames of animation where the mouth is just like this shape for this kind of sound, or this shape for this kind of sound, they fully animated the mouths to match the voices throughout the entire film.
Yeah.
To give them that level of expression.
God, that's so much work and dedication.
It really shines. Yeah, this film. Like, it makes it way more watchable than a lot of other animated mm-hmm. things, like Western and, you know, and Eastern, just all of it. It helps it be so much more immersive, being able to see the just lip movements match vocals. I don't know. It does something for me.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's especially not common in anime. Like, even, like, Studio Ghibli stuff, which is generally considered to be, like, the top-of-the-line animation. Like, even they kind of cut the corners on the lip movements, you know, because at the end of the day, it doesn't, like, most people can kind of get over it at a certain point. If they've, like, watched enough animation, they can kind of get the point that, like, the lip movement doesn't need to be perfect. But the fact that they went above and beyond and that is like really, really cool. And one other little thing that's like really noticeable in the film is that, like, unlike a lot of other animated films where they were you know, try to limit night scenes as much as possible, because night scenes and night lighting are like really, really hard to do in animation. Akira is set almost entirely at night. Like, I think there's the scene at the school, and then there's like a moment before the big finale, and then the very end of the movie. Those are the three scenes that come to mind that are set during the day. Everything else is nighttime.
There are a few cutaway shots here and there too.
Yeah.
But like, pretty much everything is set during night. And it's kind of difficult to tell, honestly, because mm-hmm. the setting is, Tokyo? Is it Tokyo? Or is
Neo
it just
Tokyo?
Right, it's Tokyo in the future. So mm-hmm. like, as the biggest possible city you can imagine. New York times 10. Like, it can be midnight on Times Square. You'll think it's broad daylight if you haven't been outside in a couple of days. Like, it, that level. Like, it's, so they can get away with it in some cases. In other cases, they genuinely do have to do the work of animating it and drawing it as if there is only unnatural lighting.
On that note, I'm kind of curious now, like, how would you guys go about, like, describing the plot and the genre of this film? Like, it's definitely, like, it's a cyberpunk film, for sure, right?
There's elements of cyberpunk, but I would say that, like, in general, I wouldn't call it a cyberpunk film, because I think that a cyberpunk film needs to have, like, a greater relationship between man and technology in particular, whereas I think this is more of, like, a like, man's relationship to, like, a supernatural kind of, like, almost, like, ethereal religious force.
Right.
You know?
The technology here is kind of incidental.
Yeah.
More so than deliberate. Mm-hmm. The part where Tetsuo, and full spoilers, by the way.
Yes.
Our podcast is on a full spoilers regimen. Mm-hmm. But the part at the end where Tetsuo gets like shot by the space laser, and his arm falls off, and he, like, goes and uses his, like, psychic abilities to form a new arm just out of the junk that's around.
Yeah.
It's not so much doing that for the sake of having a mechanical arm. It's just doing that with his psychic powers out of just whatever happens to be nearby so that he has an arm.
Yeah. So I would say that, like, maybe it meets a little bit of the qualification, but, like, if you're asking me for, like, a general, like, what would I define this as if I were trying to describe it to somebody who hadn't seen it before, I would say it's probably, like, a dystopian coming-of-age sci-fi thriller. That's probably what I would say. Like,
it really,
you know,
is hard to pin it down, though.
Well, mm-hmm. I would say it's well, it is definitely that, Josh, like, I would probably put it under, body horror, to be honest with you.
Yes, yes, there are definitely elements of body horror, especially
like
in the
it's almost very Cronenberg-esque, A lot of moments.
Yeah, you say the very end. The last 30 to 40 minutes are, like, the final confrontation with Tetsuo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nearly half of the runtime of the film is the final confrontation with Tetsuo.
Yeah, it goes on.
I mean, yeah, like, yes and no, there is kind of a lull point between, like, you know, the part where he is, like, finally gotten out of the control of the state and is, like, wreaking havoc on the city, and then, like, the final confrontation within the Olympic Stadium. But, you know, I do see that, like, it is kind of, like, a big third act, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, like, it is kind of a hard film to, like, to put a pin in, like, as far as, like, genre specifically. Like, you know, there's just, like, a lot of mishmashing of different stuff, and, you know, I think that, like, the film does succeed at its best when it's just leaning into, like, the, you know, the abstract kind of, like, horror of the situation that Tetsuo is being put under, and how, like, his inability to control that is affecting the world around him.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would definitely say that, like, along the body horror aspect, there's a little bit of Lovecraftian horror in this film. In the sense that, like, the power that they have, or Tetsuo specifically, is never really fully explained.
Yes. From what I've heard, like, I've listened to a couple other podcasts describe, or, like, talk about Akira in, like, a more, like, broad historical context, and including, like, the manga as, like, a thing that they talk about, but apparently the manga goes into a lot greater detail about that. But frankly, I kind of like that it's vague, because, like, it leaves a little bit more of the interpretation up to you, and, like, you know, it allows you to think about it more, like, on a thematic and, like, you know, how it relates to the characters, as opposed to just, like, you know, focusing on the details of, like, oh, it's actually about, like, you know, the some experiment that happened in 1987 or whatever, where they unlocked, like, the thing in the cave or whatever. You know?
Barely go into the Esper project, like, at all in the film.
Yeah.
I think that's a real issue with the film itself, is that it's missing so many pieces that the manga has in it. Because the manga, like, gets way deeper into, like, into the histories of, like, the powers of, like, Tetsuo and how that works, and how, like, all of these, how the world is and how it affects the characters and their relationships and how they all interact with each other. And the film's missing a lot of that. And it makes me think that it's a little bit weaker. So while it's, like, visually really amazing, and, you know, and the vocal performances, the acting's really good, it's just, mm-hmm. It feels a little bit shallow once you've kind of opened the blinds and you know, like, more of what the full story is.
I'm actually going to disagree with you real quick, Clayton, to be honest with you. Like, I think the strongest part of this film is how vague it is about certain things. Like I said, before, when we talked about Ghost in the Shell, I like to have my answers. But at the same time, like, this movie, by the time you get to the third act, like, it's starting to drop all of the necessary information that you absolutely need to know to follow what's going on. Like, nothing, it's minimalist, but it's, like, just enough to understand, like, okay, so these people were experimented on leading to this, and this is what's happening with him now. It wasn't hard for me to follow.
And not to bag on you, Clayton, but, like, kind of to, like, supplement that, when we were talking about Ghost in the Shell, we were talking about, like, how the film does kind of get bogged down in a lot of, like, the unnecessary details of the politics and the, and, like, the way things are working on that regard. And I think that that could have happened easily. Like, you know, if you're trying to make, like, a 2-hour film, you know, with all these crazy ideas in there, if you don't leave a little bit of it up to interpretation, then, like, you know, it could just get, like, too much for the audience to really, like, get a grasp of, as opposed to the, as opposed to a manga where they just have a lot more time to get into those details and specifics.
Well, that's another, okay. Another comparison you can make between Ghost in the Shell and Akira is the runtime. Like, this movie's long. Like, it's too...
It's, yeah.
It's over 2 hours long. Ghost in the Shell is like an hour and 40.
Yeah,
I now we're 20. Yeah.
Yeah, now we're 20. It's really, really short. I don't know if this is true, but it might have been the longest animated film at the time. It's possible. I don't know if that's true, but it might have been the longest animated film at the time.
Honestly, for me, it's not long enough.
But I don't know. Maybe I've been spoiled by doing the further research and a little bit more reading.
Yeah.
Because the film Acura only really goes about halfway into like the big overarching story. Like the manga, the manga, there's a whole, what could be a whole second film worth of stuff that happens, and it keeps going. And the movie,
yes, that's
kind of chops it a bit and makes it only about like the conflict with Tetsuo, and then it's kind of over.
Yes, that's actually one of the things that I've neglected to mention when we were talking about the history and the production, is that the manga was only halfway done when they were in production on the film. So Kazuhiro Otomo, who was writing and directing the film and also wrote the manga, he was like, shit, I have to figure out how to end this film because I have no ending planned for my manga. And, you know, I have to, use what I've got and try to figure out a good ending point for the film. And so that's kind of why that is, you know, because, at that point he hadn't gotten to the part where that second half where I believe it's, you know, there's, a second explosion involving Acura and, so, and then at that point there's more gang wars that happen between, Tetsuo and, Kaneda and stuff like that.
Yeah, it gets
is that
deeper,
what you're talking about?
Yeah, where it starts to get more into the gang warfare and the dystopian trash lives they live and just how they are to each other.
It's almost like it's almost like the opening of this film is Cyberpunk The Warriors. I don't know if you guys have seen The Warriors.
Come out to play.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now I feel like we would be remiss to not mention this, and you know what, actually, I'm seeing the time. Now might be a good time for an ad break.
Okay, well, we'll be right back after this short little break.
Well, welcome back. How was the ad? How'd you like it? Was it good? Was that good for you?
What'd you guys think of the ad?
It was good for me, only if it was good for you.
It was interesting, but the 5-minute interlude where that one person was just moaning into the mic was a little awkward.
Yeah, I don't.
That was just for you. That's not gonna be in the final cut.
Yeah. Yep. We're going to contact Spotify and give them a special version just
for
you.
You're welcome, Spotify.
Yeah.
Well, so back on topic with Akira, something that I wanted to talk about was how much this movie actually affected me on a personal level. It's a film that touches on a lot of different things, you know, the government, military, scientific experimentation,
Nuclear warfare.
Yeah.
Humanity's place in the cosmos. But the center of it all for me was the relationship between Tetsuo and Kaneda. And the core of the story is two childhood friends who grow apart because one of them has a massive inferiority complex.
Oh.
Yeah. It hit me on a personal level because there are a few things in life that I personally value more than true friendship, and I'm very much fond of my childhood friends. I still talk to them today, and there's definitely a few of them that I have had moments with growing up where I've definitely been I don't need your help. I can do this myself. You know, feeling inferior and then feeling like you have to compensate. I feel like it's something that a lot of dudes can relate to, but.
Yeah.
The conflict between Kaneda and Tetsuo sort of encapsulates that in a really intense but in real way. It's also something that's pretty, I find is pretty common in Japanese anime and manga, is the concept of the rival. And like,
yeah, like the like the people who have known each other since birth, and whether they're friends or enemies, like, you know, they start to have like this rivalry, and you know, and that kind of like brings, that comes to a head at the very end.
Yeah, and I guess the most obvious comparison to make would be like Vegeta and Goku from Dragon Ball. But like, yeah,
Yugi
like,
versus Joey really messed me up.
Shit, I mean, even fucking, and I haven't seen all that much Naruto, but Naruto and Sasuke, or I mean, I guess AJ for you, Guts and Griffith.
Although, you know, Griffith is a really complicated character. Yes. Check out our Berserk podcast.
Griffith, if somebody were to offer you unlimited power, but the caveat is that you had to sacrifice all your friends and loved ones and closest relationships, you wouldn't do that, would you? Would you, Griffith? You wouldn't do that, would you? No, Guts, of course not.
Oh, I mean, we all know Tetsuo would probably make the same decision, though.
Yeah.
You know, heartbeat.
Yeah. To get more power, Tetsuo would be like, oh yeah, fuck Kanada. Fuck all my friends. I don't give a shit. No. I almost feel bad for Tetsuo, but it's like, as soon as he gets his powers and realizes that he can cause, like, nigh unlimited destruction, he immediately, mm-hmm. like, has no remorse for anyone. Especially his childhood friend. Like, I understand that he has his issues with Kanada, but as soon as he becomes, like God, essentially, he doesn't really identify himself even as human anymore. Yeah. And it's just, it was really jarring to me to see, like, how he flipped so quickly.
Well, yeah, but then he has, like, a really, like, a rather quick flip again when he suddenly, like, loses complete control over the power of the climax.
Which is, like, a horrifying moment.
It's horrifying. He has the realization that he's no longer in control, and that this power has taken over him and is now going to destroy him.
Yeah, destroy him, destroy his friends, destroy his girlfriend. By the way, his girlfriend gets, she gets so, like, she gets the worst end of it.
That character, I question. That's really my big nitpick with this movie. Like, I question why she needed to be in it, because she gets the short end of the stick in the worst way.
And that's literally, it seems to be the only reason she's there.
Yeah, it's, honestly, you could have cut her out of the film, and I don't think you would have lost anything. But, like, I don't know, it's just, it's so sad. God damn.
Yeah, but I feel like they were trying to say something with that. Like, sort of a, maybe a commentary on like the role that women played in Japanese society, like in the late 80s. It's sort of like how like gang violence and that culture wasn't really conducive to not being misogynistic.
Yeah, that's possible. I don't know, maybe it was just that, like, because the Tetsuo Kanada rivalry had gotten to like a head at that point, maybe they really needed like a character who he'd had like absolutely no beef with the whole film to get destroyed by his power, in order to like signal that it's like really out of his control, and he's like just like everything that happens up to that point isn't like intentional by him.
Well, it definitely does help sell like the absolute terror of his transformation. Like, it's scary to look at by itself, but once it starts affecting characters that haven't done anything wrong, like, you just feel so bad for everybody in the situation.
Yeah, like, that's just, like, one of the goriest deaths in the movie, right? Like, it's just, it's so upsetting to see, like...
But, like, also, this movie has a really strange, almost like bittersweet ending to it, like as much horrible stuff that Tetsuo does, the movie still finds a way to make him somewhat sympathetic. When Kanada is in the sort of I'll say like Akira bubble, the nuclear blast, it's almost like all of their consciousnesses are merging with each other. and yes. Kaneda is seeing Tetsuo's childhood through Tetsuo's own dreams. Super trippy, but you see like how troubled Tetsuo's childhood was, and then once the three kids like use their power to save Kaneda and he ends up being okay, like the sheer energy that they pour in like collapses the Akira ball into its own little like pocket universe, I guess.
Yeah,
and like
I mean, it's not made very clear, but you know, he's in some kind of new realm now.
Yeah, like he didn't die. He transcended, so it's almost like he went to a better place.
Yeah, certainly.
But it's definitely an ambiguous ending, I would say.
Yes, and
a lot recently, and I say recently, but really more recently since the movie came out, has been discussed in terms of like atomic bomb cinema. There's this, I believe it's a book or an article or something by a guy named Jerome Shapiro, this quote is just like really not polarizing, poignant. The concept that an apocalypse does not bring around the end of the world, but a crisis-like period of intense suffering that cleanses the world of evil.
Yeah, and that's definitely something that's at the heart of Japanese culture, especially since like they're a country that I heard somebody describe it that like Japan is almost like the only post-apocalyptic nation in the world, because they're the only ones that have survived atomic blasts, and like, you know, it's a volcanic island nation, so there's like always these natural disasters happening.
Volcanoes, and, like, earthquakes, tsunamis, literally the fucking only two nuclear bombs dropped on civilian locations
in
the history of ever.
And that's kind of like partially the reason why like their culture is so obsessed with the idea of not only apocalypses but rebuilding after apocalypses, you know, like especially in this film, which is all about like, you know, the disaster happening and then what world do we rebuild after that. And in the case of Neo Tokyo, it's not such a great world, you know, and it needs to be like brought down and rebuilt again in order to be better.
It's a really bold movie to sort of make those kind of statements. Like, it's almost like a little bit anarchic, but at the same time, like, it has a point.
Yeah, certainly.
And the thing about Akira that I feel like where it has the most to say is about humanity's place in the universe. And it's like we are. The universe is chaos. We are not separate from that chaos. And it shows. And, like, there's a scene that stood out to me where Kaneda and Kei are in jail together. And the kids start, like puppeteering Kei. So she's, like, expositing to Kaneda and thus, by proxy, the audience. But talking about how, like, the evolution of mankind, like, we can track it all the way back to when the first life popped up was, like, essentially amoebas. And giving the amoeba, like, the ability to essentially evolve into humans and build the human world, like, that's, like, godlike power to an amoeba. And what's happening to Tetsuo is pretty much the same thing, just scaled up.
Amoebas don't make motorcycles and atomic bombs.
But it, again, it's like it's a power that you can't grasp or understand because it's so beyond you, and it was an interesting callback because she specifically outlines the amoeba metaphor, and then when he's transforming, he kind of becomes like a big amoeba. He's just like a blob that's absorbing everything around him. So I thought that was clever. That was really clever.
Speaking of her, like, another element in the film is this revolution that's happening all around them. Like, this kind of, like, anarchic kind of rebellion against the government that she's a part of. as opposed to Kaneda and Tetsuo and their groups, which are just kind of like these rival gangs who are like, you know, just going around fucking each other up and, you know, being miscreants.
Right, not really involved in like the greater political like standoff. Mm-hmm. Like I think there are a lot of like instances in like side dialogue where you hear people like talking about some sort of tax reform, like repeal the tax reform. So it seems that like they've gone off the deep end and they've imposed so much of a higher tax on the lowest bracket of the working poor. And absolutely none of the responsibility for the country's financial situation is being put on the people who could actually, like, bar the burden.
Mm-hmm.
And so these people have had enough and they're rioting. And it's wide-scale societal riots. Like, everyone's torches and pitchforks out in the streets.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, there's a point where, like, they're holding picket signs and it says, like, stop the imperialism or something like that. I don't know. Like, I don't remember exactly what it said, but, like, there's clearly, like, I think that to the film's benefit, it doesn't get too bogged down into, like, exactly what's happening. But the idea is just that there's, like, there's something very clearly wrong in this world. And it's, like, you know, you can see in, like, the production design especially that, like, everything's just kind of decrepit and falling apart and the country's neglecting its, like, neglecting the things that it needs to be doing. And, you know, and then there's these, you know, these riots that are being, like, very, you know, militarily controlled, you know, which, not going to get too political here, but you know, you can make some connections to events from last year, you know, just thinking aloud, you know, just thinking out loud,
guys. Wouldn't it be wild?
I'm just gonna speak that into the universe and let it float for a bit and see what happens.
Yep. Like a little light of, you know, an idea just floating out into the universe, just like, you know, like little Tetsuo.
Yeah, like Tetsuo.
Yeah, he just goes about his
floating
business.
Floating out to the universe.
Yep. But yeah, like it's interesting. And then there was this other bit of dialogue I remember that's sticking really clearly, where the general was talking to the scientist in the elevator, and he was like, "These kids don't know like a world that isn't like this. You know, they don't know a world where there was order."
Right, because like, this has happened before.
Mm-hmm.
The Akira incident, this exact thing happened before, and the only reason it's now happening again is because that scientist disobeyed his orders from the colonel and took his experiments a little too far, just because he was like, "This is neat. I thought it would be neat. I thought we could get some cool data out of it."
Mad scientist.
Yeah, and that definitely like brings us like back to the circle of like, you know, man, like, getting too big for its britches and trying to like harness these powers that it can't possibly control the detriment and destruction of the rest of the world.
That's definitely another big theme. It's like, is man ready for that level of knowledge? The answer is no. Like, the movie gives us a definitive answer. It literally says man's not ready by the end of it. It's like, because the whole idea, from what I understand, is like that power potentially exists within every person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yes. Yeah, they don't really get too hard into that. Like, you know, like my understanding of it is that when Tetsuo crashed into that boy, that's what awakened the power within him,
right?
Or something like that. But like, you know, the general idea is just that, like, you know, you just need to, like, awaken to the power to try to do that. Just as, like, you know, any person can, you know, realize one day, like, hey, you know, maybe I should, you know, try to invent the next hydrogen bomb or whatever that's gonna, you know, make the world, you know, like, that's gonna make world peace happen, and then bad shit happens, you know?
You guys think, you think that...
I know it's gonna make world peace! More weapons!
Maybe if I make a weapon bigger than everybody else's, it'll all even out.
Yep.
You guys think that Goku could take down Full Power Tetsuo?
Yeah.
He can take down Superman. He can take down anyone.
Goku can destroy a planet.
Okay, well, yeah, Goku would win because Goku has plot armor that transcends anything.
Oh, so that's the power of Ultra Instinct.
If he needs to be powerful, then you just create a new power level, and then he'll be there, and then he'll win.
I miss Super Saiyan 4.
Goku has been destroying entire planets since he was a Super Saiyan. Fuck all this Ultra Instinct nonsense. Tetsuo blew up a city. Goku is destroying planets. Of course Goku could win.
But could he have done worse? I mean, the movie...
Could Tetsuo
have? Yeah, like, the movie does say that Tetsuo is essentially like a second Akira.
Well, I mean, he did about what the first Akira did.
That's true.
I mean, he could have done more with Tetsuo.
So, I mean, I guess there is...
He could fuck up emotionally and, like, he can't control himself, so he couldn't channel things properly.
Yeah. Maybe in 10,000 years when we've evolved past our primordial human-like stage into something greater, we'll have an Akira of our own that will get to destroy planets. Maybe that's what Goku is.
So that would mean that this strange power is based on ki.
Akira is a prequel to Dragon Ball. That's what I'm saying.
This is not. We're not. I'm not engaging with any of this.
I could buy this. I could see this happen.
Dragon Balls are Akira.
The two animes that are completely unrelated, but completely on the opposite ends of the spectrum.
I've not seen Dragon Ball, but I'm gonna make this analogy work. Okay, I'm gonna make it work.
Well,
evidence be damned.
I kind of want to talk about like our personal like favorite things about the movie.
Oh my god!
Like the thing that we like the most, and the thing that we don't like.
Oh, I can do that easily, really quick. So, best part about this movie, clearly by a lot, like not even close, visuals. The animation's beautiful. It's the best that has ever happened. The worst thing about this movie is all the major plot changes they did from the manga. The manga story better, anime story not as good, but it's very pretty, so I can forgive it.
I mean, I don't think that's fair because, again, like, one is a long form, like, you know, like, written series that had, like, you know, 10 years after the movie came out to keep developing that things and ideas and stuff like that.
One is a manga series that takes up about the same shelf space as the Dune series.
And
the other is a 2-hour movie.
I'm not arguing it's a fair trade-off or comparison or anything. I'm just, he said personal preference. You know?
I'm not arguing it's a fair criticism. I'm just saying it's a criticism.
It's a good criticism. Original story, full manga story better. Once your eyes are open, you can't go back.
I mean, I don't know. I see it as like, you know, like, does it work well on its own? You know, because that's my opinion, is that like, if an adaptation like one, like, does it inherently contradict the themes of what it's adapting, and two, does its own story well? That's all I need an adaptation to do. Like, you can change details, you can change like little things here and there, you don't have to explain everything. As long as like those two things are there, then I'm totally cool.
Well, by that metric, yeah, it's a pretty solid adaptation, because it does, it keeps like, that's like 99% of the themes, and it keeps, you know, keeps the major characters and their relationships mostly intact. Can we? Oh my god!
Watch Ghost in the
Shell. I'm done with this major thing. I'm done with this major thing.
Kusanagi.
That's our first in joke of the series. Is that anytime anybody says major, we're gonna be like major.
I love this. Keep this going.
Yes, we will definitely.
We won't forgive.
All right, what about you, AJ? What's one thing that you really, really liked and one thing that you found less than stellar? Like, you know, and I'm just going to, like, make a rule right now. You have to say a different thing that he said.
Okay.
Like, even if you think the animation is the best thing.
No,
like,
I don't.
I don't think it's the best thing. I definitely think it's one of the best things, but I don't think it's the absolute best thing. I don't know. I kind of went into a bunch of stuff that I love about this movie. The amoeba metaphor, the sort of cosmic, chaotic, philosophical stuff that it deals with. The relationship between Kaneda and Tetsuo. Yeah, you know what? I think that's what I would say is my favorite thing about it is the way that it portrays Tetsuo and Kaneda as like the two yeah. central figures of the film. Like they, like their relationship sells very strongly. And then the thing that I didn't like, I'm hard pressed to find things that I didn't like because anything that I didn't like is just gonna be just a nitpick. I guess just to talk about the music. I didn't not like the music. I actually really really liked the music. I just thought that it was a bit too brutalist for certain moments. Like there are certain moments.
Yeah, like the gasping for air. It seemed to be the only track that they would use for a lot of situations that kind of felt like they needed their own track.
Yeah, but there were a lot of situations where like that worked for me. Like the situations where characters are like desperate, or and where like you feel like they would actually be heavily breathing in that situation, that works. But that track definitely plays during moments where it doesn't need to be playing. So I mean, I guess if I was listening to it just like without the film, just like on Spotify or something, I'd have a different perspective. But as it is with the movie, there are moments where it's a little awkward for me.
Mm-hmm. One thing I did learn about the film is that the soundtrack wasn't composed by like one person the way that like most soundtracks are. It was actually recorded by a collective group called I'm gonna try to pronounce this, Gino Yamashirogumi. But they're like a collective of like a ton of different like people from like not even just like people who are specifically composers. Like, you know, they have people who are in a ton of different fields, like journalism and like, you know, engineers, businessmen, like all sorts of shit. Like, you know, and all these people who just like have like a really hard interest in like music and music history and stuff, and they like just make a whole bunch of different music together and, you know, come up with different shit, you know. And so that's how the soundtrack came about. And they recorded all the music before like they had even seen like a single frame of the film, and you know, they barely changed anything as far as I know.
No wonder this is such a unique film. Like I have never yeah. heard of any production quite like this.
Yeah, like
it definitely is one of like the strengths, and I also think it breeds a lot of the weaknesses as well. Mm-hmm. Because as unique as the production cycle for this film was, it allows for a lot more creativity in a lot of spaces. It also implements some really strange constraints on what the film can turn out to be. Because when you create a score before the film has been animated, you can get a really interesting score like they have here. You can also come up with an incomplete score like they have here. There are not enough tracks to cover the scope of what they use the music for, in my mm-hmm. opinion.
Yeah, but one thing I did notice is that like there honestly isn't a ton of music in the movie, like especially as like, you know, the film reaches its peak is like, you know, a lot of it's just relying on the sound design and the visuals to carry the story, you know. And that's one thing I would like, I don't know if I would say that's like my quote unquote favorite thing that I'm choosing, but the sound design did stand out to me. It's very impressive. Like, you know, I always try to keep that in mind when I'm like watching an animated film, is that like literally every single sound that happens in the movie, somebody had to record separately, and they had to make sure that it all worked together. And oh, for yeah. a film like with such a big scope, the sound design is like like flawless. I can't think of anything they did wrong. But yeah, I do see, like, you know, there could be a little more variety in terms of, like, the tracks or the themes that they use within the tracks for specific, like, characters or themes or whatever. But it never pulled me out, you know?
Fair enough. I mean, yeah, no, there's a lot of incredible sound design in this in this film. Something that always, like, stands out to me are, like, footsteps.
Yeah.
Especially when footsteps are done well and they, like, seem to match the surface that the person is stepping on and they are timed correctly. Because as small as that sounds, people don't always pay attention to that shit. They don't... There are a lot of films where they just don't get that shit right.
Yeah, like, it's just... That's one of the things is, like, you know, like, sound design is one of those, like, invisible arts that, like, you know, if you've, like, you know you've done it well when people don't notice it at all, is the idea. So, you know, I mean, I notice it, but only because I, like, make an active effort to notice it.
All right. Well, it sounds like we might have exhausted our thoughts on Akira.
Yeah, honestly, like, I'm fulfilled. Like, I have said everything I wanted to say about it, and I will probably gush about it again tomorrow, but...
One more thing I want to get into before one thing I want to get into before we, like, close this out is, you know, for a long... I mean, like, we were... I think we went on the discussion on the other show about... American adaptations of anime.
Oh yeah.
But Akira, the live action American film, has
this
been
does not
a
exist.
Thing...
What?
Yes.
Oh no.
It's never gonna
like,
happen.
It's been a thing that Warner Brothers has been trying to make happen since 2002. Like, so nearly 20 years they've been trying to get this movie off the ground. They've had like a ton of different directors attached at different points. Like Christopher
Nolan. Taika Waititi.
Yeah. Taika Waititi's the current attached director.
Supposedly, he's doing it after.
But they've had people like Christopher Nolan and the Wachowskis like attached to potentially direct. But right now they're on Taika Waititi, who is he's a weird choice. I don't know if his sensibility matches the source material.
It doesn't.
However, he's certainly a very interesting and very creative, talented, and like you know. Interesting filmmaker, and I, you know, if that happens, like, maybe it could be pretty good. I don't know.
I mean,
I'd have to swap up his own style a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Taika, but I definitely, yeah, Clayton's right. He would have to switch it up a bit. The guy that I would want to pick
the film that the, go
sorry,
ahead.
But the guy that I would want to pick is Neil Blomkamp. Like.
Yeah, I can see him doing
District
pretty well.
District 9, Elysium, Chappie, like, say what you will about all of his movies, but I feel like he has the sensibilities to make Akira.
Yeah, and from what I've heard, the film is going to stick closer to the manga in terms of, like, how the story plays out. Like, it's not going to take... Like, it's definitely going to have to, like, excise some things in order to fit it into the scope of a film, but in terms of, like... You know, the overarching plot, it's going to more match the manga, so...
Well, that'll be interesting.
I guess that just depends on how much you trust Warner Brothers.
Yeah, and the other thing is that it's Warner Brothers. Like,
yeah.
You know, they can be, you know, they can be hit and miss
I
with
don't
stuff.
Know. Lately, Warner Brothers has been pretty, pretty insane with their spending habits, considering they put shit tons of money into a Blade Runner sequel that no one saw, but, like, it was worth it for the art,
oh, man.
But, like...
You're picking fighting words with AJ.
No, I'm just saying, I'm thinking pure business-wise, like...
It was insane for them to do that. It turned out to be a great movie.
Yeah,
nobody fucking
business-wise,
saw it.
Business-wise, I don't put it past Warner Brothers to be like, this has been in development hell for 20 years. Yeah, fuck it, let's get a guy and throw $1 billion on it.
Well, like, Warner Brothers took a risk on Blade Runner. They're taking a risk on Dune, which I am super hyped for. They brought back The Matrix, like...
Yeah.
Warner Brothers,
I feel like that one's done for money.
We're about to hit a sort of a renaissance of Warner Brothers, I think. If these movies do well.
Okay, but in the same breath, Warner Brothers also did just release
Space Jam.
Space Jam 2.
That's the one movie that Warner Brothers like gets a year that's allowed to be terrible. That is what it's.
What are you talking about? That just, no, that's on the positive pile. They put that right on top of all the others.
Oh,
Space
man,
Jam
you
2,
love
baby.
The two-hour-long HBO Max ad.
This is the one movie, wow. By the way, that I refuse to review on the Inner Circle. I will never
it's
talk
fine,
about Space Jam 2.
Tune There's in. Not enough to talk about for that long.
Tune into the Inner Circle. I'm gonna have a Space Jam 2 review up with a special secret guest. It's gonna and it will be long. It will in fact be long.
Is the guest gonna be Bugs Bunny?
I know people. That's all I'm gonna say.
I don't want to know.
You're get
so
LeBron
that's
James.
Fine. That's fine.
The Bron James.
The Bron.
Yeah, the Fortnite the Fortnite guy himself.
Well, do you guys mind if we do a little bit of an Inner Circle tradition and give Akira our ratings?
Yeah. Sure thing. We usually give ratings at the end of ours.
Oh, yeah.
So.
And we also usually, because most of what we cover has, like, extended beyond the content that we cover for the podcast. Like, Berserk has the entire manga. It has the other show, For Full Metal Alchemist, we talk about would you read it, would you watch the other series. So after our ratings, just would you read the manga?
Okay. Akira had a much bigger impact on me today than I expected it to. Mm-hmm. like I said at the beginning, I'm kicking myself that I haven't seen it before. So I'm gonna give it a 9 out of 10. I fucking love it. It's a solid movie. You should watch it if you haven't. And would I read the manga? I'm neck deep in Berserk and JoJo's Bizarre Adventure right now, but I would say the answer is yes. I would this is definitely something that would belong on my shelf.
Clayton.
All right. Well, if we're doing out of 10, 6 is average, 5 is like right down the middle. Akira is like a very strong 7, light 8.
Nice.
Just
that's
know,
actually higher than I expected from you.
Really?
Yeah, you sound kind of bum on this movie for a while.
It's about to say it's because like the main point every time I chime in that I reiterate is just I the only real manga I and like manga wise I've only really gone through Akira and I have a good overview of the lore of One Piece, so like very limited, and Akira is really so fucking good. Like it is so fucking good.
There's a reason why that poster is like in every college dorm.
Oh man, it's not in mine. I should fucking get it.
I'm working on getting an Akira poster, but not the motorcycle one. That one's too overdone. I have another one, but yeah, like it's a light eight for the film. I've said my piece. It's beautiful. It's the story's good, but it could be better. It could be better. Read the manga.
I'm seeing if they have on eBay the poster. Yes, they have the poster for the IMAX re-release of Akira. Yes. Ooh, that's pretty cool. Have you guys seen this poster design?
This plate has some pretty good Akira posters as well.
Huh?
Displate? Yeah.
Quick displate plug. We're not
yeah,
getting paid.
Listen, I'm working on the.
Oh, they make.
Metal we are not getting paid by displate yet. I will say, for me, it's a 9 out of 10. I love the fucking, the visuals, if nothing else, do it for me. I appreciate the concepts in this one. They aren't as interesting to me as the philosophies brought up in Ghost in the Shell or in some other media. I do think they're very interesting, but it's not necessarily my wheelhouse of philosophy.
Yeah.
But it is a very compelling film. It is the relationships between the characters are not as well drawn out as they could be, but again, you have to do what you have to do to constrain something into the amount of time that somebody would be willing to sit down and watch it as a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 9 out of 10. I haven't read the manga. I've been watching this movie for years. I'm going to at some point, but yeah.
Yeah.
Good soup.
Good shit. I'm personally also going to give it a 9 out of 10. I think it's like near perfect. Like, I do agree that there are some like superfluous characters, like the like Tetsuo's girlfriend, and I think that they could have even simplified the politics of the film a little bit more, just because like I think that some of the stuff gets a little bit lost. But at the end of the day, like, it's just, it's an incredibly fascinating movie that, like, you know, and like I think that unlike Ghost in the Shell, which, like, you know, I don't want to shit on it too much, but like my big problem with it is that like it's got the ideas, but it's not like a particularly engaging film to watch, like, you know, like just like it's not very stimulating. Acura is just like a lot more interesting and a lot more well executed in terms of like keeping the audience engaged in the narrative and like constantly having like new surprises come up, you know. And I think it's just like it's a standout, and you know, 9 out of 10, really, really great. Could have used more graph paper as well. Needs more graph paper.
Needs some more graph paper.
Yeah.
Agree. Increase the scientist graph paper budget.
Like, I was just watching like the graph paper dump out of that machine, and I was like, how do you have the budget for this? Like, you know,
why is it 20xx and you're using graph paper? Get an iPad, you dick.
Graph paper is the superior paper. I just want to make sure that's all that's known.
Yep, it's the goat paper. Like, you know, especially the computer kind that have like the sprockets, you know, just like
graph of all time.
Yep, best graph of all time. It's wonderful.
You gotta love analog technology in an analog future.
Yeah.
I love that aesthetic.
Yeah, it's super great.
But this has been really fun, guys. Like, thanks for having us on your show.
Thanks.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah,
you plug guys, Inner Circle. Give us your social media. Give us your YouTube link. Give us everything. It's gonna be in the description, but just...
Yep.
Plug your shit.
Plug it?
Like, or don't. Like, that's okay.
Oh. Like, I thought we were gonna, like, I mean, like, post the link in the description. But
no, plug it.
I mean,
oh, yes, we are going that. To.
Well,
AJ,
we also
want to,
like, you know,
AJ,
we want to do a call to action.
What is our Twitter handle? No, what is our Twitter handle? Do you know it?
Our Twitter handle is Watch Inner Circle.
Okay. Okay, that's good. That's good. Making sure.
Yeah, like, I know what our stuff is, Clayton. Yeah, I'm not... Okay. Anyway,
yep.
The links to all our social medias are going to be in the description. We have a Twitter. We have an Instagram, Watch Inner Circle. Of course, we're obviously on YouTube. Come check us out there. Subscribe, like, share with your friends. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah. Do you guys have any plans for any specific movies you might cover in the future?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, okay, so we're working on a few videos right now. We're going to get the Ghost in the Shell crossover episode out to you guys pretty soon. We're also in the middle of editing our review of The Matrix, so
yeah,
if you guys
rock and roll.
This week of the fucking October 18th to whenever the fuck the weekends, I'm gonna date this.
Oh, by
right
the way,
now.
Happy Sora in Smash Day!
That, oh my god, yes. Wait, it's out right now. Yeah, we gotta wrap this shit. We gotta wrap this shit up. It should be out. but yeah, we're working on Matrix. We have some other stuff coming up, but this week in particular, Sora week, we have a very, very big deal, review going up, and it's a review of a little movie called Machine Gun Preacher. I don't want to get into it. This isn't the time or the place, but let me just say, if you want to see me scream and be very angry and actually have, you know, actually express myself, this is the time. This is the one place you'll see it happen.
I have been waiting for this moment for so long. Machine Gun Preacher, guys, is a morally wrong film, and we're gonna rip it to shreds.
It's reprehensible.
Are you angry that there wasn't a machine gun preacher sooner in this world?
No. I'm angry he existed. I'm angry
sins.
The machine gun preacher is a thing that ever happened, and that it's real. It's not just a stupid movie. It's based on a real thing and a real guy who I want to fist fight. I don't care if he's old these days, at least.
I did not know that. Like, I was, like, slightly aware of the fact that this was a movie. Isn't Gerard Butler the lead?
Yes.
Yes, Gerard Butler is the machine gun preacher. And it's he's the complete opposite of the guy in real life. Gerard Butler's, like, this big European man who's buff, and the real machine gun preacher is, like, the short little fucking hillbilly biker. But yeah, so
Gerard Butler
if you
will do just
see,
about anything, won't he?
If you want to see us be very upset about that, and me in particular scream about it, you check out our YouTube page. It'll be up, should be up Wednesday by 4 p.m. If that doesn't happen, call the local hospital. Something probably happened to me. And follow our Instagram. It's Watch Inner Circle. Go on Twitter. Twitter at C Inner Circle. Because I couldn't get a hold of Watching Your Circle, so I had that handle already. But yeah, check our stuff out. The old videos are pretty good. A lot of movies AJ's deeply in love with that we kind of break down.
I try to give our audience a little dose of passion every now and then. So. Yeah.
Would you recommend that I watch the Dungeons & Dragons movie exclusively to listen to you guys talk about it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes, that's one of them. That's one of them where I'm pretty sure at some point in the discussion we just go into hysterics because you keep remembering things that happen in that movie, and it makes it a trip to try and talk about it.
It's an experience that everybody should have.
Very nice. All right, well, thank you guys for coming on our show. You know, it's great to have new guests on, and you guys are welcome anytime. You know, just hit us up.
We'll
let you back on.
I'd love to do this again. If you guys actually end up wanting to do something with Ninja Scroll, you know where to find me.
I can't wait to look up Ninja Scroll. I'm never going to learn what this is.
All right. Fantastic.
Well, and, as always, you can find us at howtootakupod@gmail.com. You can email us any questions. You can find us on Anchor, howtootakupod. You can leave us voice messages. We'll respond to them on the podcast. You can tweet us at Twitter. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook. It's all the same.
Yep, howtootakupod. We covered all of our bases. Everything's under the same handle.
Listen, so, I tried.
Covered it.
Don't put me on the spot like that.
I'm not trying to put you on the spotlight. I'm just saying, you know, everything's easy. Just remember the one thing. All right? And
how to Otaku Pod.
Yep. And then
you can find me on Twitter at Brogan_live. Actually, for the month of Halloween, it's Brogan Dead. Josh, where can the lovely people find you?
You can find me on Facebook and Twitter at JD Thorn Film. And then recently, I couldn't log back into my Instagram because I had to reset my phone, and it reset the two-factor authentication app that I had on my phone, and for some reason I can't recover that data, so I'm just locked out of my Instagram account forever now. So, you know, now you can find me on the wholesomely titled Instagram page at Thornography. So, you know.
We have a little bit of a theme going now, don't we?
Yeah, that's pretty great. I tried Thornhub Live and it wasn't.
Oh man, I'm so sad that didn't work out for you. That sucks.
It's rough. Yeah.
All right. Well.
All right. And it's as been always.
See you, Space Cowboy.
Yeah. See you.